Welcome back to the Bastionland podcast with me, Chris McDowell. And this series is the audio commentary for Into the Odd Remastered. Each week, I'll be joined by a new guest to talk about Into the Odd and the games from its extended family. Today, I'm joined by a pioneer of rules light procedure heavy design, creator of the upcoming Errant RPG, Ava Islam. Welcome, Ava.
Hi, Chris.
Are you happy with that that title?
Sure, yeah. You've got like the great radio announcer voice.
Oh well, you know, I'm hoping to just transition into local radio DJ is my dream.
I think that's a smart career choice.
Yeah, I think like the midnight to 2 a.m. slot would do me well.
Yeah, it's like if there's any medium that's more popular and thriving than tabletop RPGs, it's like radio, right?
Oh yeah, FM radio, yeah, 100%. So for those people who aren't familiar with your work, would you mind giving us just a little bit of an intro?
Sure. So Errant is, it's like not fully out yet, but it's an RPG. Big surprise, it's my take on the Dungeons and Dragons formula. And yeah, like Chris said, it is it's a lot heavier, I think, or bigger looking than a lot of the sort of like lighter OSR games that things have tended towards in recent years, like Into the Odd. But my focus on a lot of that has not been sort of like large rules cruft, but on sort of a lot of the kind of procedural information and systems that have tended to be like whittled out of these minimalist games. And so just like providing referees with a large suite of options to help run their game.
And we will get to Errant, but like I said, unfortunately, this series of podcasts is unfortunately very self-indulgent, because this is something people wanted, apparently, was an audio commentary to go with Into the Odd Remastered. And nobody wants to hear me talk about it for 6 episodes. So I thought it'd be good to get some other people in to talk about their games as well. But with regards to Into the Odd, I thought you'd be a good guest here because you made the mistake of listing me in like the credits to Errant. So I thought, yeah, I can use this as an excuse to get Ava on the podcast.
I'm very happy to be here and to talk about Into the Odd. I love that game.
So yeah, what's been your experience with Into the Odd?
It was so I read it basically probably close to when it came out, like because I found the sort of OSR general blogosphere around like 2014, 2015. So I think that was close to when the original version of Into the Odd came out. The first time I played it was actually with Patrick Stewart. It was like a game that was at like 3 a.m. my time. And yeah, so I was like super sleepy for it. But yeah, it was just like one of those like very first, like in terms of like how to run old school D&D, like I encountered like, you know, like basic expert and whatever and stuff when I was like a kid. But not enough that I like really understand it. So when I talk about like the sort of like canon of RPGs that like shaped my understanding of like what RPGs were, Into the Odd was like one of the first ones that I like really like encountered like that.
Awesome. And was that game being run by Patrick?
Run by Patrick, yeah.
I never knew that he'd run it. I'll have to grill him on that next time I see him. That sounds like it would have been right at the start. Yeah, 2014 I think was the release.
Yeah.
So from there, you sort of cite a load of other sort of influences from sort of a similar similar era, like things like the Black Hack, and you know, blogs by people like, you know, James Young, Ben Milton, sort of a little bit later perhaps. But was it kind of a case of drawing on a broad range of influences when you came to sort of wanting to make something that was your own?
Absolutely. Well, I feel like it was like, I feel like for me, it was like a little bit of a case of like sneaking into my parents' closet to like play dress up and then like wondering why the clothes didn't fit. Because I was like, mostly like I was like reading blogs. I was like, I like most of my experience running into the odd is like actually like in the last like 2 years. But before that, I mean, I was mostly just like reading your blog and reading everyone else's blogs and being like, okay, so there is clearly some particular kind of game being played here with all of these like precepts about, I don't know, like exploration and resource tracking and decision making and making those things matter and running a dungeon crawl and running a hex crawl. These all seem like great things to do. How do I actually do that? Because I was like looking at the rules and I was feeling like there was like a bit of a disconnect for me in like I couldn't see like how one got from point A of like what was written on the page to like point B of like what was being written on the blogs, which is like in retrospect, now that I've like figured it out, I can see the connection, but it's like a little bit about like how you don't remember what it was like to not be able to read after you learned to read. So Aaron was like me kind of like going to blogs and like trying to like reverse engineer the process by which one played a particular game of this style of Dungeons and Dragons. And a lot of that was like just like obsessively reading like everyone's hex crawl procedures or mechanics for tracking rations or whatever and fiddling with those, like tackling like one discrete problem at a time until I felt like I had like solved all the problems.
Yeah, because I think it's easy to look at games like Into the Odd and see that there's very few rules and think that that makes it easy to run. And that is something that I hope is the case. But I think, especially when you've got newer players or players that don't have all the same points of reference as I might when I was writing it, you're right. It can sometimes feel like, yeah, you're missing a section. And I ran a very, very rules-like game last week. I used Cosmic Highway, which is, do you know the 24XX games?
I do, no, yeah, by 24. Jason Tachi.
Yeah.
You were live streaming those the other day.
Yeah, that's right. So I actually did run the game with people, and it's you know it's super rules light. And at the end of the session, we'd had a really good time, but I was kind of slightly exhausted because it felt like I was having to use a lot of things that I didn't necessarily have to think about because I've you know run these kind of rules light games for a while now. But somebody coming in, I think it's. Like you say, it's hard to write for somebody who's coming in without that kind of experience. Definitely,
yeah, it for sure is. Have you seen that like how to draw an owl meme?
Yeah, that's the OSR, isn't it? Yes. Essentially, play the rest of the game, basically. Yeah, it's and it's a tricky one. I think that my boring like answer is it's probably good to have both. Like, but I almost feel like we have a lot of those ultralight games now that are great if you know what to do.
Yeah, there's no need for you to have any competitors. We're good on ultralight games. No need to write anymore.
Yeah, I've solved it. Yeah, it's done. It's it's resolved. So just for those people who aren't in on the I mentioned in the intro the idea of rules light, procedure heavy, which to be honest, when I saw errant sort of flash up however long ago it was that it sort of caught my eye, that was the phrase that got me, and straight away I thought I'm interested in this because that's not something I've seen outside of, like, I guess you could argue things like basic D&D, if you can call that rules light. Like it's messy rules light. But so yeah, it was you sort of found that you were almost wanting those procedures that were perhaps getting stripped out of simpler games.
Yeah. I think the process of writing Errant was like literally like kind of the process of like me writing my own like how to like DM manual, which is it's funny in the sense that I've like talked about this a few times, in like how oftentimes, especially like where I'm at now, I feel like if I did write a game now for myself, it would look like a lot like something more like Into the Odd or some like,
sure, yeah.
Or a lot of the things I've written down are things that like I don't super need all the time anymore when I'm running a game now that I've written them down, because I'm like, oh, I have some sort of idea of what this like general framework looks like, which I can like deviate from or riff on. But I've got that like grounding. But yeah, when I was writing Errant, everything was like basically like absolutely new to me. Like I remember in 2015, I think everyone back then was like really into hex crawls for some reason. All of those like big Google Plus community hex crawls are happening. And so when I was like, I'm gonna stop running 5e and start running an OSR campaign, I was like, okay, well obviously I have to do a hex crawl. And I was just like it's hard to like convey how like at the most like brat, you know, when like there's that like sort of there's that sort of thing that people talk about when you like try to explain someone to D&D who has like no frame of reference for what it is, and you're like, oh, it's like playing make believe, and it's like, and you know, it's like Lord of the Rings or whatever. But then someone asks you, okay, but like, how do you actually play the game? Like, what materially do you physically like do? And it's sort of like this like huge stumbling block. Is that's like I wasn't like that for like RPGs in general. I knew how to play an RPG, but like when I was like, I remember like reading everything I could about hex crawls, like Alexandrian's like huge long series on how to run a hex crawl, and just like not like I feel like I kept asking the question of like, but like literally, how do I move the characters from like one hex to another hex? Like, what does that process look like at the table? How do I make that happen? It's like an easy thing to like grok in a board game. You have a little piece, and you say, I move the piece from this like square to that square, but like how does that happen in an RPG? And I guess like the answer I came to was like, oh, it's just like the same thing. People are obfuscating it for no reason. But yeah, oh, I fully lost the tangent on what the original question was at this point.
No, I think that's irrelevant. I think the question is a spark for conversation, I guess.
No, I know. I just like
Use my continuing
I
analogy.
finished that thought, and then I was like, what do I say after this? Because I was like, when I started that thought, I was like, this ties into answering the question, but then I forgot what question I was trying to answer.
Well, in terms of like using procedures to sort of support you in things that maybe don't come naturally when you first come into the game.
So then it was like, yeah, it was all stuff like that. Or it was things like, you know, I'm like running a campaign, and then people are like, hey, I want to start like a revolution or a death cult. And I'm like, cool, I want to like support your dreams. But I don't know how to do that. Like, I don't want to just like hand wave it and say like time passes and you do that. I don't want to just be like, okay, roll me a d20 under a stat, because that seems like lame. And I certainly don't want to spend like 6 months like role playing it out to like every single minute detail of like how that happens. And so I was like, okay, well, I like need to like come up with some sort of like thing that I can do that makes this feel like a meaningful part of like gameplay, in the like proper actual sense of the term. And then yeah, like a huge one for me was like also just like how to run a dungeon, like how to run a dungeon crawl. Because I guess it's one of those things too where you look at how like time is tracked in these old games and how movement is tracked, and it's like by the number of feet, and it's like, okay, so like am I meant to just like count out each little like square or piece that the characters go along? And I remember like my experience like playing in 5e games on like Roll20 was just that like, you know, the DM would like drop us on a map on the virtual tabletop, and we just sort of like slowly point and click and drag our little like tokens across the screen while until like the DM like decided to describe something. And I'm like, that like can't seem right. There has to be like some sort of like meaningful structure to like hold on to make this like whole experience make sense, right? Yeah, and so a bunch of it was just like me going in and realizing that like people like, because I feel like all most of the solutions I came to weren't unique or original. They were things that like people had like already figured out. But like for some reason, like no one was really like saying them out loud, or at least that's what it felt like to me. Like I had this like idea, I remember I had this like revelation where I was like, oh, okay, so like there are turns in the dungeon. Like a board game, as one does. That's like a very easy structure to understand. That's like the one of the earliest play structures that you learn as a child is like I go, then you go. And you can sort of you have like these like little boxes in the map already that like function as like units to structure action. So you can just count a turn as like moving from one box to another box instead of like having to deal with this like with this, like, you know, the nitty gritty of like, I move 90 feet because I'm carrying 600 coins of weight or whatever.
Sure.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, that's like such an amazing like revelation. Why is like no one thought of this? And then I like looked online and it was like, oh, like Necropraxis and like John Bell of Retired Adventurer and like everyone else using the overloaded encounter die has basically already figured this out. But for some reason, that's like never in any of like the rule books that you read. That's just like buried away in the blogs underneath all of their like more popular posts. And I was okay, all right, like cool. Wish somebody had told me.
It's the problem where any kind of advice that you put in your game, I think you're going to get the same two responses. You'll get somebody that thinks, oh, this is too broad and it doesn't make sense mm-hmm. to me. And there'll be somebody saying, oh, well, that's too obvious. Everybody does that. I think that the example I see more often than anything else, not so much nowadays, but more sort of a few years ago, was the Apocalypse World, like GM principles.
Right.
That some people like, love them and they really resonated with certain people, but then some people were saying like, oh well, you know, this is all basic stuff, it's not new, everybody does this anyway. And it's kind of missing the point that it's how you present that guidance mm-hmm. to people. And it's impossible to make it fit every single person. So some people are going to be different perspectives than others. Like you're not going to be able to create a way of presenting the information that's going to resonate with 100% of the people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, having those procedures like sort of a bit more solidly laid out, it definitely seemed to be like a gap to me. And yeah, you're not going to please everyone with one of those, with whichever way you do it is my kind of thoughts on it.
No, for sure. I think that's like the thing that you like have to do is also like the thing that you like have to accept, like when you're making anything, is that your thing can like never be like all things to all people. You just have to like solidly make it like whatever the thing that it is.
Yeah, exactly. And you've got to, I think this is just my own personal like preference, but I think it's great to make a game that certain people will come to you and say like, oh, this really clicked for me. Mm-hmm. And this was something that it like changed the way that I think about changed the way I think about games, but it sort of this allowed me to enjoy games that I sometimes struggled with previously. And I think like for all that people, you know, like to shit on Apocalypse World for whatever reason, the fact that it did that shows that there is a real power in the way that the information is presented. Mm-hmm. Tapping into like a sort of specific person's mindset rather than trying to make something that's going to please everyone, like you said.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's also like, I think you'll get a kick out of this, Chris, I think there's also like value in when something like absolutely like doesn't click for someone also, because like the rule set that I started building Errant on top of specifically was the Black Hack, because that was like the one that came out right when I decided I was going to stop running 5e. And I like didn't want to like run an actual like old game, because I like looked at those rule books and I was like, who the fuck has time for this? And then like the Black Hack came out and I was like, oh, this is very easy and this is very simple and like everyone's in love with the system and it seems so great. And Errant was really like born out of like me like trying to run the Black Hack and being super duper fucking frustrated with it. And being like, wow, this like doesn't work. I don't get it at all. And instead of that like repelling me, it like pushed me like obsessively maniacally deeper to like fix it.
Well, one of the previous people I've had on this podcast was really praising the Black Hack, so it's only balanced of me to allow you to slam it in such a way.
I love the Black Hack, but like I love it in the way that I like love the person that you like date in high school who is like absolutely terrible for you, but like let you figure out who you are as a person through that experience.
Yeah, and I think also it's for the best for both parties if sometimes a game is clear about what it is. Like, mm-hmm. I think there's some people that will they will read an RPG and they'll know straight away it's not something that's going to click with them, and that happens to me a lot of the time. And it's better to, like, if we're going to continue down this relationship analogy, it's better to sort of end it at that first date and say, look, this isn't going to work, rather than sort of holding anything back and then discovering an unfortunate secret sort of a year into the relationship.
I agree. It's hard to like properly hate a game or really anything, I think, that's like really like open about like what it is on its sleeve.
Oh yeah.
Like 100%. I'll cut that thought short. Anything else would have been rambly.
So you've mentioned like wanting to sort of Black Hack was sort of the skeleton of perhaps the starting point of Errant. But was there anything particularly from Into the Odd that did make it in?
Yeah, I mean, like mechanically, I think like the thing that people will notice most, or like that like has the closest genealogical relationship with Into the Odd, like is Errant's combat system. I've ditched the 2-hit rolls. I have like some version of like enhance and impair, although it is like a different version than the one that you use. So like I think that like has the closest similarity, but I think what influenced me more was you talk a lot about like the idea of like having like specific principles that you like had in mind when you were like writing Into the Odd. Like opting for like plain language over rules verbiage whenever possible, you know, like keeping the three safes primary and stuff like that. And it was that sort of like idea of like design focus. I think that I really wanted to like bring to Errant, and I sort of like had my own like list of principles, which I like put up on the Kickstarter about like not like basically like not wanting there to be like any math after you like roll the die, for example, like for almost everything, it's just like you roll the die and like what the results are, what you get. Like sometimes you add like plus one or two, but that's like never a number that like comes from your character sheet or whatever. And yeah, like the focus on like keeping things procedural, on like having things be like player abilities and all of that stuff be like active choices on the player's part rather than like passive, like just sort of like your approach to design, I suppose, in terms of like, because like those aren't even the same principles as yours, but just like the idea of like having principles of trying to keep things like focused around a theme.
Sure.
There was also like I guess like the position and impact rules that Errant also came about from a set of conversations that I think like radiated out from your blog when you were talking about like setting difficulty in Electric Bastion Land, when you were talking about like why you might not want to like introduce advantage and disadvantage, and like how you can like modulate like both like outcomes for success and outcomes for failure with the roles, rather than like introducing things like difficulty modifiers or advantage and disadvantage and whatnot, which in itself I think like also like came out from you reading Blades in the Dark, which so like it kind of like is like two pronged, because I was like reading Blades in the Dark obviously, like who wasn't? But yeah, so a lot of those are like the little brain worms you've injected into me that have made its way into my game.
Well, the thing that really leapt out at me when I was looking through it, mm-hmm. where I thought, this is something that really clicks with me. Is even though you've got, you know, people might think that I hate rules because I'm always talking about like minimalist design and all this stuff. But I think I like a good rule that kind of does its job very, very effectively and then gets out the way. And even though this game has all these procedures for things like exploration and travel, and it's got the sort of the magic system is quite involved in terms of like the procedure of it. Mm-hmm. Like you say, what you've done is kind of, I'm thinking back to like, weirdly, I've been looking through Traveller, the sort of original classic Traveller RPG. I don't know if you've ever had the pleasure.
It's a bit of a blind spot for me. I think like years ago, I was obviously like, oh, I'm going to like look at the life path generator because it's a meme, but I haven't like dug deep into it.
Well, it's very 1970s and it's for better or worse. And, but one of the things about it is it feels like there's, every procedure in the game, I feel like I have to like look in two different places and two different charts and cross-reference different things. And then it's kind of, there'll be like a checklist of, there'll be like a method for me to work through that's like six different steps. But even the ones that are quite involved here, I think you've kind of tried to sort of really condense it down to, like you say, if whereas other designers might, it might have been like three different roles, it'll come down to one role or... And just like just making it so that even if it's a, I don't mean this word in a bad way, even if it's quite a complex little procedure, mm-hmm. It's still quick and efficient, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this all of this stuff like came about all of this stuff is like stuff that I've used. Like I've been running this game on and off for like the last 6-7 years, and that's like how it came to be, is it like evolved through the playing. And so I think because of that, like a lot of the stuff in there has, I mean, I would like to say like a nice like table tested feel, in the sense that like it's something that I actually used, and so can be used. Like it's not going to take up like a million hours at your game. It's more, yeah, they're I feel like the bulk of the of a lot of the procedures comes down like not in into like the role itself or like the mechanics, but like the ways in which it provides like a GM a tool to like structure agency for the players in that particular moment that like somehow maps onto like whatever the situation is. Like I try to keep it like very like game like, for lack of a better term. Like I mentioned board games earlier, and I think that was like a big sort of like line in my thinking, was like how like almost like, yeah, like how can I make a lot of these things more game like at every turn, in the sense that there's like systems to consider. So it's not really so much about like making several like roles or adding a bunch of things together, but it's about like thinking about something in the context of like the system and what those decisions, what impact those decisions will have.
Yeah, sure. Like that's the kind of space that I'm really interested in exploring now, is this idea if you can still have complex decisions and you can have lots of factors going into those decisions, mm-hmm. but then even if it just comes down to, if to use an extreme example, even if it literally came down to a coin flip,
yeah
I think I'd almost rather be focused on everything that happens before the roll and everything that happens after the roll, rather than trying to get the mathematics of that particular roll 100%.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think that's kind of a rabbit hole you can kind of get stuck in when you're sort of designing these rules.
Yeah, it's very easy to like think about like the roll itself should like simulate the actual event being simulated. I think it's usually even, but yeah, you can like get away with just saying like, talk about these, decide on 5 things before you flip a coin, and then the coin flip will like determine what happens of those 5 things. You can just give people a list of things to talk or think about.
Yeah, but it's my hot take on Blades in the Dark is that you could, I'm sure somebody has done this. In fact, I'm certain somebody has, but I forget who. You could probably just run the game just using the position and effect procedure and a coin flip. And I'm not saying that, we need to throw away our copies of Blades in the Dark and John Harper should be stripped of all of his Ennie Awards. But I think it would be an interesting experiment to see how much of that game comes from, because I think a lot of that game comes from that particular system, that kind of position and effect thing, mm-hmm. which I've rambled about many times before. But one of the things that that you mentioned previously was that the sense that everything that's in this game, it very much feels like it's been tested at the table, and looking through it, it almost feels like you're looking through somebody's like notes that they've taken as their GM in the game, and like rules that have kind of emerged from the table rather than being sat at a desk. And if I can push you for a potentially hot take now, which we might delete if it's too hot, do you think that testing is, how important do you think testing is to making a system like this?
I think it's like super important, but then I also like playtesting is like weird in RPGs, right? Cause it's not like a video game where you like test a finished product and then that like product is like the end of it, or like, you know, like a recipe. Like you can't like if someone sets a plate of chicken down in front of you, you can't like take a bite of that chicken and go like, oh, like this is really good, but like let me like go back into the kitchen and like tweak some things about it. Like you can do like a little bit, you can add more salt or like squeeze some lime over it or whatever, but you can't like go back and be like, I'm gonna sub out the tomatoes and the sauce for bell peppers or whatever. But that's like often like what happens in RPGs, right? Is that like a lot of these, I'm sure like a lot of these rules, like a lot of these rules in my game came from like blog posts that I don't think anyone tested, right? That like probably like someone like thought up in an afternoon and just like decided to write down because they thought it was cool, or maybe they like tested it out in like 1 or 2 sessions. But then like, you know, someone else came along, like me, and decided to like use that rule, and then refined it more, and then that goes in my game, and then probably someone else will like find something in there that I like completely overlooked, and they were like, "Wow, that doesn't work at all. That's stupid." And then they're going to like go ahead and change it, and so it's like almost this like philosophical, like discursive chain of like playtesting that happens like between and through and across games.
Yeah, I think even because I know that playtesting is it's sometimes very difficult to actually organize if you don't have access to sort of a lot of players that are willing to try out unfinished things. But I think looking at Errant especially, I think the approach that I've sort of landed on is that I think even if you can't test your game a lot, you should sort of design your game almost like it's a part of prepping for a game. Mm-hmm. So the things that you're, so you're not going to sit down and sort of think, well, I'm going to make a travel system for this game for no particular reason. Mm-hmm. It should be because I want to run a game for my players where there's going to be travel involved.
Yep.
So I'm going to make a travel system. And even if you're kind of, even if you're just kind of doing it as a bit of a dummy game, mm-hmm. I think you can reach kind of a nice middle ground, a nice compromise just by sort of, almost like creating an imaginary playtest, which sounds absolutely bonkers now that I've said it out loud, but it's that kind of trying to create an environment where the rules will sort of almost emerge organically from your needs as you kind of prep the game. And that's the kind of sense I get from Errant. Does that make any sense at all?
No, for sure. Yeah. But I do think it's funny that you're describing role-playing.
I'm not necessarily endorsing like sitting at a table by yourself.
I mean, I feel like that's like a big part of like how people engage with this medium, right? Like how many people people have talked about this a lot, right? About like how like things like Pathfinder adventures and whatever are probably more designed to be like read, and then you like imagine what kinds of adventures you would have with your adventuring party if you had one, than to actually be played. But yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, yeah, like design should happen with intentionality.
Yes, that's a much more succinct and clear way of what I was trying to say, for sure. So just to dig into some of the specifics of Errant, I'm not going to sort of go through every rule and procedure in here, but there were a couple that really kind of leapt out at me, and I'd be interested to know sort of how you kind of landed on them. Mm-hmm. The system of miracles, which is used for the Zealot?
Yeah,
class?
The Zealot.
So this is kind of, if I'm going to be really dumb it down, this is kind of the cleric of the system. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it is. It is the cleric of the system.
But in particular, the way that the kind of the testaments are laid out. Mm-hmm. So without sort of describing the entire system, would you be happy to give like a really quick summary of the way that the testaments work and the miracles?
Yeah. So basically, instead of having a set spell list, the Zealot has like, they have like a general idea of like what their deity is like. They might like say like the three or four things that their deity is in charge of, right? Like this is a god of like fire and the sun and agriculture, very standard like proto-Indo-European deity. And then they're walking around the dungeon and they see like a giant fire and there's like a baby in a burning building or a cat or whatever, and they're like, oh, my deity's a fire deity, could I try to like perform a miracle to like put out this fire or control it or move it elsewhere? And the gist of the system is that basically you roll a couple of d6s, and you can add some points that you have from like a little pool of points to like increase the roll, and you're trying to like meet a certain threshold. The basic one is like very similar to a PBTA move where it's like 2d6, you're trying to roll above a 10, 7 to 9 is like a partial success. Below that is a failure with if you roll like a 2 or a 3, it's very bad and your little dude will explode. And you can like negotiate with the GM for like effects with obviously like more powerful miracles requiring higher roles. So that's like the gist of the system. And yeah, this is like another one of those ones where like if you've like read OSR blogs with any degree of frequency, you'll be like, oh, Ava's just done a plagiarism, because this is like lifted almost entirely wholesale from Logan Knight of Last Gasp Grimoire's system,
right,
that he had for miracles, like for his clerics and wizards, which was a similar thing. I've like tried to like trim the math and tidy it a little bit, Like he had like a list of like five results. So, you know, I've like condensed that down to four. His was like rolling 4d6, and you would like have to like compare like your cleric's level versus like the level of the spell. There was a lot of subtraction and addition and a lot of things going along there that I've like tried to like simplify and streamline and obviously like tie it like into the mechanics of like the particular class that I've written in a specific way. But yeah, it really did basically come from that. And then a lot of the streamlining was, like I said, like influenced by Powered by the Apocalypse games, seeing that like basic structure corresponding between the two. And of course, like that like structure itself is like taken from like D&D's reaction roll of like rolling a bunch of D6s and getting that gradated table of results. But yeah, that's like basically where that one came along from, because it was just like, I think that's the thing is that I was saying before is that like a lot of these are like me taken from like people's blog posts, where I think a lot of those blog posts are like by people playing like classic D&D and being like, here's a fun new like alternate system that we could do for this. That's like fun to test out. And they may be like test out for a couple or two, like one or two sessions. But I think most people like more or less go back to playing classic D&D rather than like the maybe slightly more Baroque house rule that they've created, because it just doesn't mesh as well. But for me, my primary point of reference was like people's Baroque house rules, not like classic D&D. Classic D&D was like buried a layer deeper for me. So when I was like, oh, I want to run clerics, I didn't have the vanilla cleric that I wanted to replace with something. I was like out there looking for an entirely new cleric. And that was like the first one that I found that was like the most interesting. And so I was like, yeah, this is the kind of thing that I'm going to like stick in my game. And I think a lot of that was like, again, like born from the impulse of just like me being like kind of an awestruck teenager reading people's blogs, being like, these people are all super cool and creative. I want to be like them. I want to take as many things from their blogs as I can and put them in my game. And so that they did, and they just stayed there. And then as they stayed there, I was like, well, I need to like refine and trim these things and make them work a little bit.
But it's interesting, because that's kind of a very similar story to how I kind of got started with the OSR as well. Because when I first sort of discovered these blogs and, you know, people like Patrick Stewart and at the time, and there was a lot of really cool ideas. But I didn't grow up with D&D either. Like I played like a little bit of Warhammer Fantasy when I was a teenager, and a lot of sort of Warhammer tabletop stuff. Mm-hmm. And then later came to like third edition D&D. So whenever I would see anything, I would almost like turn off when they started talking about basic D&D and things like that. Because I was like, so much of what makes this cool isn't like the specifics of basic D&D. And I don't mind basic D&D. Like I'll happily play, you know, OSE or anything like that. But it's interesting. This is a topic for another podcast, I'm sure. But it's interesting when you look at sort of the OSR and the influence that it's had. And somebody can do like a huge blog post about how much of that actually comes from sort of basic D&D, because it's sort of split into these waves, isn't it? Like people have sort of talked about first wave OSR and second wave OSR, and it's testament to sort of the power of some of those ideas that were coming out of the blogs at the time that they resonated more than like the source material for sort of like people like me and you.
For sure. Although I have had like a, like, I feel like the latter part of Aaron's development was, like, predicated on, like, going back to the source material and, like, really trying to, like, understand and get it in a lot of ways. I think I said, like, I started out with, like, a lot of stuff in like, things like the Black Hack or, like, other, you know, like, second or third generation games, which I think were being made by people who had an understanding of the source material. And so those like games made sense like in the context of that. But like for me, I was like still a little bit confused. I remember I had this like kind of like almost like eureka moment, which seems like very silly in retrospect, where I was like reading BX, you know, and like looking at the encumbrance rules and then how they affected movement rate and like how movement rate affected like your frequency of encounter checks, like literally the rate at which you get through the dungeon and encounter more monsters, and like things like your torches are tied to that movement rate, and then there's like chase rules on top of that. And I was just like, oh, this like creates like a game loop where you like go into the dungeon, you pick up stuff, and like as you pick up stuff, like the dungeon like escalates in difficulty. That's like really, really fucking cool. And like because of like, because I think like so many people had like kind of like taken that for granted, like it's one of those things that like once you see, you're like, oh, I maybe don't need like specific rules for this. I just maybe need to keep that structure of play in mind to like ramp things up as yeah. people go deeper into the dungeon and like make resources more scarce, you know, torches start blowing out and chases start happening. But without those like rules to like hook it into and to see it, to make it explicit, it was like something that like, I don't know, I guess I just like didn't fully get. You know, I had a lot of fiction, a lot of like really cool like purple prose about like the dungeon as a mythic underworld being hostile to people or whatever, but like no like game systems that facilitated that. And so then when I like looked at that like in BX, I was like, wow, this is cool. Like the rules for it are like kind of clunky and like not to my taste, but this is like when you look at them like in total, like the sum effect that they produce is like something that's like just really interesting. And so a lot of like what I was doing was like almost like I was like looking at specific rules in BX and being like, how can I essentially like create that same effect or that same outcome but with different rules? Like I've likened it as a process before to like the idea of like trying to recreate a dish with like completely different ingredients, just like subbing everything out for everything else, but like still trying to get the same sort of like unity of effect and taste at the end. So yeah, I think that's like kind of an interesting movement that's like happened for me, is that like I did first encounter and was first inspired by things that were like not the source texts, but from there I did go to the source texts and find new appreciation for them.
Yeah, 100%. That's part of my reason for reading Traveler, which I need to start like a full-time Traveler podcast to get all my thoughts out on that. But yeah, it's very much the same kind of thing where that you can almost like you almost need both sides of the coin. You almost need that evocative, like you say about dungeon as mythic underworld, just like something to get you like pumped up and inspired and understand sort of what the destination is, and then you kind of need like the directions to the destination, you know, in the form of those more sort of prosaic, like, well, here is a system for movement, here is a system for encumbrance, and this is how you make that kind of builds the foundation underneath the kind of the more kind of monumental blog posts like that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and it's interesting too, right, in terms of like the historical sort of movement of it, is that like, I mean, oftentimes like, I mean, like the sort of like whole historical narrative around the early OSR was that like, oh, like this is a return to the game in the way that it was actually played, right? Which yeah. I think like people have like started to push back on in recent years, where like, that's like not necessarily true. That's like really sort of like a romantic myth that was like invented to sort of cohere a movement. And you can talk to like anyone at any point, especially like pre-internet, and people were playing the game in like all sorts of different ways. But it was like the OSR form of D&D is like an interpretation of classic texts. It's like one specific way in which to like read them. Like I think it's like people like look at all of the like weird dungeon mechanics in D&D, like it's like, why do doors like close? Why can monsters see in the dark? And you like arrive at an interpretation of that that is like, oh, well, the dungeon is a mythic underworld. And then you sort of like, it, like people, you know, like then I come and read that, and then I like go back to the original rules for that, and then I like tweak those rules to like fit that interpretation even more. It's just this like strange process of exegesis that happens. That I don't know, I'm interested in.
Yeah, it is like an interesting feedback loop, and without getting too kind of, you know, grand scale, it'd be interesting to see like what's sort of the next sort of few waves will look like. And
for sure,
as you kind of keep adding like another layer of feedback to each sort of
iteration,
I think it's gonna be interesting. That's that's about as much as I can predict. So I think we're getting near to the end. Was there anything else you wanted to say about Errant or Into the Odd or anything like that?
I think Into the Odd's a very good game. I'm very excited for the remastered version. It looks very pretty.
Sounds like I'm holding a gun to your head.
Johan Noor did a great job on the layout. Chris McDowell, absolutely brilliant game designer and writer. Should give him all your money. Yeah.
I'm going to have to edit this out. Awesome. So thank you so much for joining me, Ava, and for making Errant. And if people want to find out more about you and your stuff, where can they go?
You can go to killjester.com, and that should, at this point, have all of the relevant links for if you want to give me your money, or if you want to find a place where you can yell at me and tell me I'm stupid or whatever. All of those things should be available to you.
Fantastic. And thank you again for coming on, and thank you everyone out there for listening. And as always, you can keep up to date with everything I'm doing at bastionland.com, where there are links to the Discord server, Twitch and YouTube channels, and to Patreon, where you can help support everything I do. And you can join me next week, where I'll be welcoming another guest to talk about Into the Odd. Goodbye for now.